Eddie, good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody is bundled up, staying inside. It's a little nippy outside. Man, last night it got aggressive. It was cold in a hurry after a beautiful, beautiful weekend. Actually three days here in our city, but it is back to the wintertime, probably a lot like last night in Buffalo that we'll get to in just a moment. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you for the next 4 hours. Elijah Campbell manning things at our game studios. We'll head east. We'll go to Rocky Top here in about 15 minutes to bring in Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal.
Take two. You missed yesterday. We tried to have him yesterday, and the phone said no. No Vince.
And we couldn't even blame it on the parking garage.
No. No, it was definitely on our end. What
it was our bad.
What in the world is going What in the world is going on? We had dogs and now no Darren, and I have no idea what's going on.
Okay.
Off to a good start. You never know what's going to happen at Darren's house. I mean, you really don't. Willie, how are you?
I am well. I am looking forward to the show today. Big time game last night. Wow. What a drama in Buffalo last night.
I know.
I thought that was one of the most intriguing, unique games that I've seen in a while because of the weather.
Yeah, the Patriots attempted three passes.
Three passes.
And won.
And won the game.
That's what's amazing.
The tactics of playing the wind and which way you're going and how to go about it, I thought it was a great chess match. And the two teams approached it completely differently. The Bills basically tried to run their offense partially because, and I'm coming around on this. Listen, you guys know I have backed the Bills a lot as a powerhouse team, but their Achilles heel is going to get them beat, and it got them beat last night. And in the playoffs, especially if they get to host some games, like they almost would rather be on the road, I think, because they can't run the ball and they can't really stop the run very well, even against a team that basically telegraphed all night long, we're not going to pass the ball and we're going to get enough running yards to win this game. It easily could have gone a different way, as Sean McDermott pointed out. The Bills had much better field position. They had four opportunities in the red zone. And they just didn't cash in. They went backwards, but partially because they can't run it.
Right.
It's hard to pass when the wind's gusting at 50 miles an hour and constantly 25, 35 miles an hour. It's hard to be accurate.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the kickers, what happened there.
That was a big part of it, too.
I mean, that you kind of took that. And the other thing is the Patriots going for two early. I mean, that was certainly a game changer. Because of the kicking, that they
brilliant,
went ahead and got that
brilliant piece of strategy there, as it turned out, gutsy.
Mm-hmm.
But they determined a 35-yard field. It'd be one thing if the extra point was 20 yards, like it used to be, but 35 yards was very difficult, as we found out later in the game when the Bills tried a field goal from that area. And so they said, you know what, we're going for two. And that decision and the fact that they got it dictated a lot of things for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
So that was you got to say, Bill Belichick, that whole thing about, oh, is it Bill, is it Tom? I never bought into that. They're both brilliant.
You're right. It's both.
But if you thought Bill Belichick was getting marks off, you know, think again.
Well,
or if you were in that club last year going, oh, see Bill Belichick, you can't really. He's doing a really good job. That was a great game plan.
In a calendar year, and I'm not saying I'm one of these people because I've been pretty consistent in saying, I'll believe when they're dead when I see that they're dead. But in a calendar year, you've had people write off Nick Saban in Alabama, who are now the number one team in the country, just won the SEC and are in the college football playoff, and write off Bill Belichick and the Patriots, who are now the number one seed in the AFC and on fire right now at 9-4.
And the Bills, I think, rightfully so, probably walk out of that stadium last night saying we should have won this game, despite all of that stuff.
And they were frustrated.
But this
if you watch the press conference,
I think
they were frustrated.
Oh, yeah. And we'll get to that a little later in the show. But I thought that the Patriots won the way they've been winning. There's just a lot to be said of going out there, playing good defense, and not beating yourself. Just attention to detail, sticking with your game plan, not making the big mistake that's going to cost you. What happened to the Bills? They coughed up the ball on an unforced turnover that had no business happening, just a simple handoff exchange where they gave the ball away. And they went backwards a bunch of times in the red zone with, you know, a false start penalty here, a sack there.
And yeah,
a missed 33-yard field goal, which was going to be tough in in those conditions. Yep. But they knew it. Like they knew when they had the wind. That's what's really intriguing about the game. You knew when you had the wind, you feel urgency to make it happen while you have the wind.
Right.
They had the wind. The Bills had the wind in the first and the third quarters. Didn't really make much out of it.
Right.
And the Patriots had the touchdown against the wind. The one big running play that they had for the touchdown, which was the difference in the game, that was against the wind.
So, Darren, I think you're back. Are you more
of a out-coached? He did. He did. He got out-coached. He got out-Belichicked. He just did. But going back to what you said, is it Brady or Belichick? It's both. But until Belichick wins a Super Bowl without Brady, it's Brady. Because Brady was won a Super Bowl without Belichick. So until Belichick does it without Brady, right now the answer is Brady. But they're both essential because they're both elite and they're both Hall of Famers and they're both the best at what they've done. But right now, they've separated and one has gone on and won a Super Bowl and the other one hasn't.
Yeah.
But last night, McDermott, he got out-coached. He did.
He did. I mean, and it's, you know, I know we're going to play this press conference because it was asked in the press conference, is it embarrassing to let them run on you like they did and only attempt three passes? The answer is yes.
Yes. It absolutely. That's what I was getting ready to say. Like, how do you, like, you know the conditions. And they ran, what, for 250 yards or whatever the number was?
I mean,
they crammed it down their throat. And everybody could see it coming, and yet Buffalo, who's supposed to have this vaunted defense, number one in a lot of stat categories, they couldn't stop it? I mean, quite honestly, I thought it was embarrassing, and it was in Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo should have won that game, and it's what I've been saying all year since we've been doing these rankings. There's something wrong. They're paper champions, and they just are. You know, Buffalo, they got to prove it, man. They're 7-5. And they're, you know, we can look at their roster now. We also realize that they don't have Tre'Davious White the rest of the way either with a torn ACL. And that's going to make a difference down the stretch. But guess what? The Patriots didn't have Duggar. He's important, too, on their defense. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know why Buffalo was off because, as you guys, we can go through the rankings and I can look at them and show that I had Buffalo lower than anybody else during our rankings because – at some point, you have to prove it, and that's a game you got to have. It's Monday Night Football at your place. You got to have that. The Patriots attempted three passes for 19 yards, and you lost.
Yep.
Quite honestly, I just think that's embarrassing. So, you know, will Buffalo still have enough to probably find their way into the playoffs? Yeah, probably. But I'm just telling you, there's something off with this team. They're not a juggernaut. They're not. Right now, it looks like the road through the AFC is through New England and Kansas City. That's what it looks like because Baltimore, by the way, took another hit with injuries. I mean, they have lost, I think the number was like eight full-time starters to season-ending injuries.
Yeah.
Like Marlon Humphreys is out.
The Titans have obviously dealt with it, but I mean, the fact that they're losing guys for the season –
yeah, it's just not week to week or IR for 3 weeks. I think I saw eight starters they've lost for the season throughout the course of the season.
It's tough to overcome.
Yeah. And they finally bet them, and they went for two, and they lost. But, you know, I find it hard to believe that Baltimore is going to be able to sustain this with all these injuries that – you know, at least with Derrick Henry, there's hope, right? At least it's not, hey, he's lost. We'll see in 2022, like the next season of 2022, not like the calendar year. Where Baltimore, they're not getting these guys, but Marlon Humphreys is done. Like, he's out. Like, he is
still
lost
think they
the
make
season.
The playoffs, though, just based on the rest of the AFC. Now, the Bengals could, if the Bengals can just get consistent, they could win that division, but because I agree with you. And I've thought, you know, I watched Lamar Jackson. And I know a lot of people praise Lamar Jackson, and there's times he deserves it. But I watch him, and he's a great athlete, but he's also a liability at quarterback. I mean, there's just mistakes that he
makes as a
quarterback.
Well, that was a terrible pass, Andrews. Yeah, that's on him.
Right. That's what I mean. So that he can get them places, but he can also hurt them all at the same time.
It is up and down, and sometimes you just never know which way he's going to go. And he has not, over the course of his career, you would think he would be cutting down on some of the interceptions that he throws, but he's not. If anything, it's going the other way. Like, remember, he won the MVP 2 years ago because he didn't make as many of those. Now, it's up and down. Brett Favre used to strike me as a guy like that. Sometimes he would take so many chances that he would have games where he would just blow you away, but he would also have some games where he threw three picks. So Jackson sometimes has that within one game. That reminds me of Favre, right? He'll make spectacular plays, and then the play where you're like, what in the world is he
doing?
But
Favre would the next week go for 450 yards and four touchdowns.
Yeah, but Jackson can do that. Yeah, absolutely.
Here's the telling stat.
I wouldn't compare Lamar Jackson throwing. He's got an arm, but his throwing to Brett Favre, I wouldn't put him in the
I didn't say
category.
Throwing. I said as a quarterback. He's an MVP of the league.
Well, yeah, because he's really, 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 really dangerous with his legs.
Well, that's part of the quarterback position.
Right, but I'm not going to compare him to the – when you say he's throwing the – yeah, Brett Favre threw picks, but the next week he would come back and throw for 450 and four touchdowns.
Right, next week Lamar Jackson could run for 200 yards and throw for 200 yards.
Okay.
Right. He could.
But at some point, like, your legs are going to go away. Your arm, if you have –
I'm not talking about what happens down the road. I'm talking about today, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, well, Lamar Jackson right now, Baltimore with their injuries, I don't consider them a threat.
Well, and he's already surpassed his career high in interceptions with 13. Since he's been in the league, 3 in 2018, then 6, then 9, now 13. So he's going the wrong way with that.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Last night was a big gaffe.
Oh, and the Titans are the 2 seed right now on the bye. They actually moved up. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Well, sometimes it pays to be, it pays to have a bye week because everybody loses around you.
I would say this, too, and I don't remember, there's a long way to go. As we've said, we're not sure anybody's going to get 12 wins in the AFC. It's not a certainty. I would rather have to go to Foxborough if I'm the 2 seed than go to Arrowhead. And hope if you can get the 2 seed and the 1 seed is the Patriots, I'll take that. I would love another crack if I'm the Titans at going to Foxborough. I think the Patriots are beatable.
But
you'd rather go to Arrowhead?
Yeah, you would.
The way they're playing right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's I don't know about that.
So are you saying you've been saying you wanted to see it for a few weeks? Are you a believer now in the Patriots? Are you in? Are you on the?
Yeah,
are you on
the
bandwagon?
I mean, you have to. I mean, last night. I mean, they're not dependent on Mac Jones. I mean, they have a rookie quarterback. I mean, it's really hard to hitch your wagon to a rookie quarterback in the playoffs.
Well,
it's really hard. Look at their track record. It's awful.
Right.
I mean, and so, but guess what? They're not depending on Mac Jones.
Because what
are they depending
him.
On?
They're protecting him.
Of course, because that's what a smart coach does.
But are they protecting him?
They're playing to his strengths. I would characterize it like that and not, quote, protecting him. I think they understand.
If you throw three passes, you're protecting, somebody.
Him. I want to ask Tim.
They understand
this.
Where he is in his career. He's a rookie. Yeah, and they understand how they're going to win. That's
protecting.
That's smart.
But
that's
are they protecting him too much is the question. And I'm curious of Tim's answer on that.
No, why do you say that? What's protecting too much?
Why do they – I get it. They had a game plan last night because of the conditions. But if Josh Allen
– Threw 30 passes.
Threw 30 passes, completed 15 for a buck 45, why can't Mac Jones throw more than three? Like
– He didn't need to. Like take the week before against the Titans. The Titans, I thought, did an outstanding job of taking away – the running game. They didn't let the Patriots run all over them. They forced Mac Jones to throw. But what did the Patriots do? Screens, short throws. He made a couple of key throws at key times, the touchdown pass in the red zone on third down. But he didn't have to do that much. They're working to what he does well. And I think he, to his credit, for a rookie, he's pretty smart at understanding what he needs to do and what he doesn't need to try. He's not making the big mistakes that a lot of rookies make. He's not having those games where you're like, oh, there's a rookie mistake. He's minimizing those.
Well, it was up to Buffalo's defense to stop their run, to try to force him to throw more, but why would you? I mean, if you can run for 225 at their place, run all over them, why do you need Mac Jones to throw? I mean, that's on Buffalo. I mean, they didn't force him to do anything. And what I've been saying about Buffalo is going to bite them. I've said this entire time, what? They cannot run the football. They can't run the football. Other than Josh Allen, that's it. They have no running game at all. They just don't. And how are you going to make that work? How are you going to get to the finish line with no running game? You don't think a smart guy, a smart defensive coordinator like Bill Belichick can figure out how to beat you? Well, what do you got to stop? The pass. Okay. That's what he does. He takes away your strength. Okay. Well, we're going to figure out a way to take away your strength. Good luck. Now you got to try to run. They can't run. How's Buffalo going to be a threat, truly?
It's a good question.
Run the football. They cannot run the football.
Nope.
It's what. Remember last year I kept saying that about Pittsburgh? Like, they cannot run the football. Even when they were 11-0, I was like, the team can't run the football. And guess what? It bit them. How's it not going to be the same for Buffalo? They're just as inept running the football, other than that. Can you bet? The only thing they've got, the only saving grace that they have, is they do have a quarterback who's mobile. Roethlisberger was a statue, and they couldn't run, so it was like the double whammy. At least Allen can move. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know how it's going to change. Good luck with that. I just say it's a bad, bad loss for Buffalo. All right, we'll come back. We'll head east. We'll bring in Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal WNML. We'll do that on the other side as you listen to Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, you know what that music means. It's time to head east. Let's head to the Smoky Mountains or a parking garage. That's usually where our next guest is. Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal WNML there in Knoxville. By the way, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Back here on the DDC, it's presented by Curation CBD products, curated for life. Vince, the Transperfect Music City Bowl has announced it is going to be Tennessee and Purdue on December 30th. We were talking about it last week. We were like, the perfect matchup would be Tennessee and Penn State. That would have been the perfect matchup. Like, that would have been a guaranteed sellout. But, you know, Tennessee-Purdue, if that's the consolation prize, that's not bad.
You know, I asked Vince about this yesterday when the phones went out, and I was really, really looking forward to his answer.
I mean, it was teed up perfectly.
I mean, it was great. Like,
oh, you actually started the interview?
I've told you this three times, yes. we did. We started the interview, and our phones, it wasn't the parking garage, and our phones.
I know. I would love to blame it on the parking garage, and we were just stunned. We were stunned. We had to look ourselves in the mirror. We just had to do it.
Look at McFarland playing coy, playing dumb, like he doesn't know that he was the one that absolutely pulled the plug on those phones. Because he's like, if Vince is going to be on from the Smoky Mountains or a parking garage, he's going to be on with me. So
you're suggesting a sabotage?
I can neither confirm nor deny those allegations.
I could see it.
You know, the fans are kind of like, I'd say a little bit all over the place on this matchup with Purdue. Some are fine with it. They appreciate the season that Tennessee had and going to, you know, a good bowl game. There's fans that are fired up to be able to drive there from wherever they're at and get there and enjoy Nashville. There's other people that are like, no, this is not prestigious enough. We wanted to go to a Florida Bowl. We could have gone to Florida. You're taking those schools over Tennessee. We wanted to go to the beach, all that. So it's been a mixed reaction. That being said, there's so many Tennessee fans that will make their way there that it's not going to matter in the end. I think there'll be just an incredible amount of orange there. It'll be a huge success. Fans, as you get closer to it, will get more and more fired up about the bowl. Look, a couple of years ago when they went to the Taxpayer Gator Bowl in Jacksonville, initially there was the meh on Indiana, and then you start to learn more about them and feel better about the matchup. You're like, let's do it, chance for a win. And I think that will be the overriding factor of appreciating what the opportunity is to get an eighth win and, you know, what that means compared to what that is compared to what you expected from the season before. So I think it'll work out just fine.
Yeah, I mean, they can get a first-hand look at what, you know, could have been their coach instead of Jeremy Pruitt, you know, if, you know, things were different. But was there ever anything offered to him? Did Jeff Brohm ever get anything offered to him at all? Or did he get shot down?
I don't know that it ended up being an official offer. I mean, probably got to that stage. I'm still trying to remember because, one, we've had so many of these coaching searches. Two, there are a lot of names, even going back to the before Heupel, where you know, guys were talked to, and you know there's some, you know, some backroom negotiations before it ever got to the official offer stage. I mean, that's where it can get to a gray area. So I'm sure they got down the line with him in terms of talking parameters and interests and here's what we got, that kind of thing. I would imagine they did get that far. But, you know, you could say that about a number of coaches that, you know, that Tennessee could end up facing. You can connect those dots with a number of guys. So obviously James Franklin would have been in that category on top of going back to Nashville, the wins at Vanderbilt over Tennessee. I mean, there would have been so many natural ones, but yeah, I don't know that the Brohm thing is all that special or different, honestly.
I haven't looked at the line. I think the only line that interests me in this game is the over. I don't know what the over is, but I'm taking the over. That's what I see in this game.
I'll tell you what, I looked at it yesterday. Purdue actually opened, according to Vegas Insider, Purdue opened as a 2.5-point favorite. It swung to 2.5 to 3 Tennessee side. Hmm. The over-under started at 58, which way low.
58.
Then I've seen it. Yesterday I saw it at 61, 62, depending on the book. So I'm guessing that both of those numbers are going to go up, the spread towards Tennessee and that over-under, because that's awfully appealing.
Yeah, jumping on that 58 would have been nice.
Oh, my gosh. I wish you would have told me it was at 58. I would have absolutely hammered that. 58. That may have been halftime. I mean, so.
Yeah, and look, I was just going to say, I mean, we don't know who. There's some key defensive players that may or may not be there. One we know, Nalante Taylor. And Purdue's top pass rusher may not be there either. He's opting for the NFL, but we don't know if he's going to be there yet.
And that's where I was going next, because this is the tricky part, right? This is why I hate predicting the bowls, because, I mean, now you're just going to see all the good players, or at least a lot of them. You know, I saw Oregon's Thibodeau already like, yeah, peace out, Ducks. I'm going to worry about being the top 5 pick in the NFL draft. I mean, this is where you see a bunch of guys opting out. So, where is that, let's say, injuries and opt-outs, where do we sit today on the Tennessee side of things in the first week of December?
Well, the only one that I'm aware of to this point is Alante Taylor. And he announced on social media that he was going to head to the NFL, start preparing, and skip the bowl game. Now, the part of it that's most important is to get healthy. He said he's been dealing with a foot injury. He wants to be 100% for the Senior Bowl and all of the pre-draft prep and opportunities. So I'm fine with that. Kid trying to get 100% healthy before his biggest job interviews of his life. I'm fine with that. Does it suck for Tennessee? I mean, for everybody that he's not going to be there? Yes. I'm fine with those situations. The ones that are just going to be like, yeah, I'm done. My coach left, and I'm done. I'm just going to prepare. You're already one of the top few draft picks. What's skipping a bowl game in those practices with your friends when you can't get that time back? What is that going to do? I get it. Injury, potential, all that. But you can go back and start talking about that for any game in the regular season as well. So I'm not as much a fan of those, but with Taylor, it was to get healthy, so that's fine. There aren't any others that I'm aware of. And then what's an interesting part to your question, Darren, is another sidebar to that is that there hasn't been anyone from Tennessee to hit the transfer portal either. You're seeing that at a lot of schools.
Yes.
Also. And that transfer portal was like, you know, you're playing and you're in the casino and you're just pulling the lever and those things are just rotating out. That's how often those things are being updated. But, yeah, I think that's a positive. And since Tyon Evans, the end of the year, and by the way, he's headed to Louisville, that's a plus for Tennessee. So no injuries, no opt-outs, just Taylor so far.
This is something we discussed. I asked this question after we lost you yesterday. Of course, we had to fill the time somehow, right? Without you, the big void that you left. But
good thing you're pros.
I wonder in another when all these kids grow up, the ones that decided to make this move. I completely understand if it's the circumstances for Alante Taylor. You're injured, and you need to be healthy for the Senior Bowl and prepare. If there's not an injury issue, I do wonder down the road, will players look back and say, you know what, I wish I would have played in the bowl game. I just want, because we're not as far removed from that yet. It's still fresh for a lot of people. This is really something that started happening about, I don't know, what, 5 to 7 years ago? Maybe the years start running together for me. But what do you think the answer to that is? Because you just mentioned the camaraderie, the bowl game. It's easy for us to say the bowl game doesn't mean anything. But I do think it means something.
Well, especially when they're always talking about the brotherhood, right? And how much that connection with them, how much they love their brothers. You know, I know for this Tennessee team, they all talk about, have all year, the fun they're having, how much time they enjoy being around each other. I know Taylor is talking about, you know, when they had the open week, that they didn't wait until they were required to be back. Like, they started coming, they came back like a day early just so they could hang out with each other. So that's what you're walking away from if you're skipping a bowl game to prepare. I guess you could technically not play and then still hang around. But, man, that for a competitive athlete, that can't be easy. Just say, no, I'm sitting out while all my other guys are selling out to actually play a game. So I'm guessing when they get older, when they slow down and they mature, probably look back on that and say, man, I wish I had that one more ride with my teammates and representing the Power T, where now this is, especially when if they get to the pros and it's a business and you're like, man, that was fun. We got taken care of. We got all this stuff from going to the bowl games, or you're not working as an athlete and you're in real estate or insurance and you're sitting there bored out of your mind and you're like, man, I wish that bowl game back. I do think that eventually a lot of those guys, if they mature, will want that back if they stepped away, not because of injury and prep for the NFL.
So, Vince, I know there's some whispers, there's some signs pointing to Hendon Hooker coming back. I want to ask you about that, and also, what does the quarterback position look like next year? Would they be thrilled to have him back a year older, or do you think there's anybody that would compete with him that you might even get an upgrade there?
Well, they absolutely would love to have Hendon Hooker back. His teammates talked about that they have sort of, you know, not pressured him, but tried to sell him on coming back. Hey, look what you did in year one. Think about what you can do in year two. All those kind of things. So, yes, they absolutely want him back. They're thin at quarterback. And I do think, I've heard from scouts, from Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl, who said that everything he has heard, it's pointing towards Hooker returning, which he thinks is a great move. He didn't go through the senior day activities, which is not an absolute, but it's one of those things that you could point to. I think, yes, a lot of arrows are pointing in that direction. Where he's projected in the draft, I don't think he's definitely not a day one pick. I don't think he's even a day two pick. I think he's an early day three pick. And to me, when you have an opportunity as an older player with a lot of upside and an offense that puts up big numbers, I think he can improve his draft side next year. Now, how much? That's probably up for some debate. But I think he can help himself a few rounds. Even though I don't see a Kenny Pickett type of enhancement. But I do think with all those things on the table, it would be smart for him, and I think it's going in that direction to return, which is huge for Tennessee. The only other scholarship quarterback they have right now is Joe Milton, who knows if he decides to go, but he's already transferred. But he is a graduate, so I guess he technically could. And then you have Tatum Jackson, who is their commit, who they hope to get a signature from coming up next Wednesday for the start of the early signing period. And he's a four-star, really talented quarterback from Greenwood, Indiana, 6'5 kid, so a quarterback with some nice stature and athleticism. So they're excited about him. But that would be, if he signs, that's your scholarship quarterbacks right now. I would imagine that they will at least explore the transfer portal to have another body in there.
We're talking to Vince Ferrara, 99.1 The Sports Animal in Knoxville. And Vince, I jotted this down Sunday night, and I know you quote tweeted me when I was tweeting about this, but Trey Smith has been such a cool story to see. You know, obviously he falls down the draft boards because of, you know, all the concerns with him and the health issues, but he's really made a name for himself in his rookie year with the Kansas City Chiefs. He was featured some on Sunday Night Football. They were talking about him, but just really neat to see is now it would appear, you know, if he stays healthy, that he's got a long NFL career ahead of him.
No doubt. I think he's got an all-pro NFL career in front of him. And, look, he's position versatile as well. He takes his craft really seriously, and he's just absolutely mauling guys right now. And they've just been ecstatic about him in Kansas City. And rightfully so. They know what a steal he was at that spot. And, you know, been there, done that. It was about the questions with health and then getting the medical in advance of the draft, which raised questions, so you couldn't get that clarity. And so he slipped. And Kansas City is the beneficiary of it. So it's been a perfect match for him. They obviously have some other issues on their O-line and that offense, but man, it's as good as you can ask for him. And now he can get past the not worrying about the and trying to manage those blood clots, and he can just ball. No school, no medical. He can just ball, and now you're starting to see what he is capable of. And I know Tennessee fans; he's got a special place in their hearts for sure because of what he dealt with, how well he handled himself at Tennessee and overcame all that. He's obviously a great story and already is one of the most popular VFLs in the league.
How do Vol fans view the college football playoff? Alabama wins the SEC. Now they're the number one. Georgia drops to three. Do they want Cincinnati or Michigan to win this thing? Are they in for the conference? Is it anybody but Georgia? How do Vols fans look at this right now?
Yeah, rooting for the conference thing, that it's a little bit split. Like, some people are like, you know, root for the conference, but then the hardcore rivals, then you got to put that conference crap on the side for some fans, and others under no circumstances will they root for anyone else in the league. I think you got to look at it in a number of ways. If it's Alabama again, what does that change from what you've been having to deal with and trying to catch up to their talent, trying to catch up to all the selling points that they already have? I don't know how much higher you can get than where they're already at in stockpiling championships. So I don't think that really changes anything if they win. But then, you know, if you're a Tennessee fan, they won't root for them under any circumstances. But then if Georgia wins, I think that's where it can become maybe a little bit more difficult, because now Georgia's notched with a championship, where this league has been viewed as Alabama and everybody else in terms of finishing it off, other than, you know, LSU from time to time. So, and they're in the East. So, yeah, Georgia is a monster in terms of recruiting and trying to catch up to them. Might make it even more difficult just a little bit if Georgia was to notch But my guess is that they would want somebody like a Michigan or a Cincinnati to win rather than one of those two programs, because they're both rivals, and Tennessee goes up against them a lot in recruiting overall. But it's still pretty spread on how people view it.
Real quick, pretty cool for Rick Barnes and his team. They'll play at the Garden tonight in New York City, taking on Texas Tech in the Jimmy V Classic.
Yeah, and their freshman point guard, Ja'Kai Ziegler, is from New York, so that's his backyard. So I talked to Victor Bailey Jr., senior guard for the Ball Network pregame, and he's like, man, we've been giving him heck all week. And he's like, oh, I got to show you around. You got to go to this place, and I'll give you a tour, stuff like that. So he's geeked. He'll have a ton of friends and family there, and he's not going to be afraid of that big stage, and neither will Tennessee. Kennedy Chandler just put on a show.
Vince, I watched him that game Saturday, and I was just like, holy cow, that kid is special. He's ridiculous. I mean, you better do something this year, because he is long gone the minute the season is over. That guy is going to be a top five pick for sure. Man, is he good.
Yeah. Yeah, Tennessee hasn't seen a freshman like 40 years easily, maybe more than that. He's thought of by some as the best freshman in the country.
Yeah,
he's already their best player.
Mm-hmm.
It's offense, it's defense, it's juice, it's swagger, it's all those things. It's being coachable. I mean, he's a total package, and Rick Barnes is still on him. So he's going to get better because he's willing to be coached hard. That's not good for everybody else down the road.
Mm. Well, hey, December 30th, let's go down on the sidelines, and I'll see if I can talk you out of less leaving early. Okay? Be fun.
Yeah, the situation, it may be a little bit different, maybe higher scoring, so maybe you won't be as, hoping to leave early. And then again, it could be very cold, and I may be like, yeah, let's go this time. We'll see. But, yeah, looking forward to that.
Well, with my track record, it guarantees an overtime thriller. So there we go.
And then rule change in college football based on how that game ends.
Well said. Hey, thanks for doing this. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Appreciate you guys. Have a great one.
Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal in Knoxville, and he was talking about the bowl game here against North Carolina and that crazy bizarro ending.
Oh, wow.
That was Derek
Dooley. Yeah.
Yeah. That was and we were down there on the sidelines. I was like, you want to get out of here? He was like, let's wait just a few more minutes. I was like, all right. And then
wanted to leave early?
What are you talking about? That's not me. I don't leave early. That's why it's weird. I don't leave games early.
You leave races early.
I do leave races early. You're right, because I don't like to be with 250,000 people or 200,000 people and sitting there for 4 hours. Yeah, races, I do. Sporting events, I don't. I don't have a track record of that. That was kind of weird for me to say that to Vince. I don't even, not even sure what that's been. Hmm. What year was that?
Nine,
right? Oh, something like that. Well over a decade ago. I don't even remember why I said it. Maybe I was like, hey, let's go get a bite to eat or something. I was like, hey, you want to get out of here? And it's like, let's wait a couple more minutes. I was like, all right. And then, the next thing you know.
Who was the coach at North Carolina then? Was that Butch Davis?
I believe it was.
I think that's right. I think that's right.
Because
that
was swirling around the academic fraud at that time.
Yes,
2010.
That had to have been Butchie, right? It had to have been.
That was the Tyler Brace throat slash game too, right?
That wasn't Fedora, was it?
I think it was Butch.
I think you're right. I think it was Butch.
It was.
I feel like we had him on the show leading up to the game.
Butch Davis.
Okay.
Very controversial ending. Very controversial.
I think they did Burger King sacks.
T.J. Yates was the quarterback.
T.J. Yates. Okay. I think he's still kicking in the league, isn't he?
He might be somewhere.
Yeah. Houston Texans legend.
He's holding the clipboard.
He is the backup quarterback for. No, wait. He's a coach now. He is the passing game specialist for the Atlanta Falcons. He is on Arthur Smith's staff.
Okay. Oh, so he's in the league with the clipboard and coaching, and not backing up.
All right, we'll come back. David Poyle, by the way, in about 30 minutes, our weekly chat with Predators GM. We'll come back, wrap up the first hour of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next. Hey, if you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Calgary Flames, that'll be at Bridgestone Arena on December 14th. Head over to YouTube, subscribe to the game's YouTube page, and you'll automatically be entered for a chance to see the Preds and Flames. Yeah, all you have to do is subscribe. Do that. It's easy to do. Then email us at promotions@cromwellmedia.com with your YouTube handle. A winner will be chosen on Monday. That's Monday, December 13th, back here on the DDC. So now that all this, by the way, more coaching shuffle yesterday when I was out. I'm sure you guys were talking about it. Mario Cristobal getting $8 million to go to Miami, Florida.
Well,
is that a better job than Oregon?
I know he's covered it yesterday.
I know he's
there. Did you see the breakdown of all the money though? They have to pay. They're paying Manny Diaz around that to go away.
Okay,
which is just they threw him to the curb.
The
guy that played for them.
And
came back.
It was pretty weak. It was weak sauce.
Totally weak. Then they had to pay the buyout to Oregon to get Cristobal, and now they're paying Cristobal.
Yeah, it's a ton of money.
What happened to Miami? I thought they weren't spending money. All of a sudden, have they realized
boys? That is one thing they're trying to show is they are pouring money into the program like they haven't before.
Right.
They have made that public, but in doing so, they look like a bunch of, I think, classless people. It was just cold-blooded what they did to Diaz.
Agree.
Diaz has tried to handle himself as much as he can with class. I really liked his statement. He could have buried them, but he held back, I thought. And I hope Manny Diaz finds a landing spot and has some success. They started winning games late in the season. That was the thing that made this really tricky because he can sit there and say, you know what, we were making strides. We beat Pittsburgh late in the season. They had some good wins down the stretch. He can say, I was making progress without all these benefits that all of a sudden the team – and the school is apparently putting into the program, and now you're going to buy me out, you're going to buy Cristobal out, and you're setting aside all this money for assistance and upgrades and all these things. What about me?
No, it's pretty crappy how they handled it. And here's the other part of it. Like, one, Darren, your question is valid. Is Miami a better job than Oregon? I would say no, not right now. But also, what's the shine on Cristobal? He's done okay, but I don't understand. He's a name that keeps coming up.
I feel like his day was back, the hot name was, 6-7 years ago?
Yeah.
5-7 years ago. Is
he's
it
a Miami
still?
Guy. He's,
right.
He played for Miami. Yeah. That's part of the reason I'm sure he's
part of the U. He's part
of the U. He played
well,
on
good.
So, national title teams.
Manny Diaz did too. He got.
I know.
Screwed,
I so, know. Yeah. Doesn't that maybe give you a little warning flag if you're Cristobal? I'll go in there. I'll go back home to my alma mater. What happened to the last guy that did that?
Have you seen Darren the favorite for the Oregon job? It's a name we all know, and they're all very familiar with.
By the way, real quick, pause. Okay. Did you see Joe Moorhead got the Akron job?
Oh,
that's
wow.
A huge victory for Akron. They got Joe Moorhead as their
coach.
I mean, that program has been a bottom feeder for a good while. My goodness, it's one of the worst jobs in the country. So good for them. I'm trying to think. So, let's see. There's been too many extensions. So Lane got the extension. Hugh got the extension. Mullen, I haven't heard anything on Mullen. It's been quiet on him. What about Dan Mullen?
He is not on the list I'm looking at. He is not on the list.
Okay.
He should be, but he's not.
Rich Brooks?
No.
You're warm. You're warm.
I'm warm?
You're very warm.
Oh, I'm going down the right path.
Think second tour of duty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not Chip.
Yes,
it
is.
Chip. Chip Kelly is the favorite.
To leave UCLA and go to Oregon?
Yes, sir. Plus 150, according to a lot of the books. Heavy favorite.
Wow.
Kalani Sitake from BYU is second at plus 400, and I do believe he's talked to him. He's done a nice job at BYU.
Yes, but here's the thing. Remember when Oregon was, you know, oh, it's Phil Knight and Nike, and they've got all this money, and it's cool, and they have different uniforms, and man, they throw money like crazy in the facilities. Have you noticed like how they change coaches like every 4 or 5 years?
Since who left?
Since Chippy Doo.
Yeah, and the guy that replaced him, who inherited his team, still had a couple of good seasons. I can't remember the guy's name.
Well, Willie Taggart was there a year, wasn't he? And then he bounced.
Yeah, oh yeah, he bounced but it's for Florida so State. It's steadily gone down. They have a lot of resetting. And of course, they had a pretty good year this year.
Yeah, Cristobal's been there for
five
years. Yeah, so it was Kelly, Taggart for a year, then Cristobal.
They still have all that money. That's one thing that's appealing, mm-hmm. And it's a league that you can that's winnable.
Yeah, well, and if you're
it's there for the taking, somebody's got to rise to the top of that league. You know, it's
what
a league
is the fascination
full of,
with Chip Kelly these days. We're going to go to 2022.
Why wouldn't Oregon be fascinated with Chip Kelly?
Yeah, because they know him, and there hasn't been a fascination with Chip Kelly. It's back now because UCLA had a decent year.
They did have a decent year, and I think when a guy did some things at Oregon.
I thought
Oregon,
he was the master. I thought he was the genius.
I don't think he's viewed that way anymore.
Well,
he is by Oregon.
By Oregon.
Is he, though? Really?
Remember who he was. He was the offensive coordinator at New Hampshire or something. Like he was an absolute nobody when he got to Oregon. And then he lit the world on fire. I think that certainly he's got to resonate with a lot of those people who follow that team. Now, it may not for you and I, sitting here in Nashville, where, you know, it's been a while since he's gotten stuff going, but he did have a good year this year.
If you're him, though, you can go back to Oregon and be daddy again, which he would be, and run the Pac-12 North, whereas in the South, if USC comes back, which, I mean, I think everybody thinks they're going to with Lincoln Riley – Do you want to fight with USC?
It's a fair question.
He would, you know, he would for obviously to win the Pac-12, but I think he could go to the Pac-12 North in Oregon and be the cat daddy. Because mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just
wondering when's Chip Kelly since he's left Oregon. When has Chip Kelly been the cat daddy anymore?
He didn't. Cat daddy is a you know.
He's not the cat daddy anymore.
Okay, but there's a lot of names that were the cat daddy that are no longer the cat daddy. Tom Herman, Charlie Weiss, Charlie Strong. Go down the list. Okay, there's a ton
Strong.
Of them. Those guys were all cat daddies.
Not
and
like Chip Kelly.
I would also add Chip Kelly in the NFL, which is where he left Oregon to go. He didn't do that bad.
No, he never made the playoffs. So yeah, he didn't do great either.
Okay, but
he never made the playoffs.
He didn't do that bad.
He never made the playoffs, so he didn't do that great either. So what? Yeah, he didn't go 0-16, but I mean
he had winning seasons.
They had winning seasons, but it wasn't good enough to make it to the playoffs.
Chip
Kelly
wasn't
that good.
He was not. Yes, he did make the playoffs.
Yeah, he did with Mariota.
Did Chip?
Yes.
I'm talking about with the Eagles.
Oh, with the Eagles. Okay, I'm sorry.
I thought he did make – let's take a look at his years with the Eagles. They were not bad.
Did he make the playoffs?
I think they did one time.
I thought they made – they got 10 wins and got snubbed like Miami last year. Didn't they do the 10-win season and get snubbed?
Let's just take a look.
If there was just a device we could use, you know, that could give us quick answers.
Eagles, 10-6, lost in the playoffs.
Yeah, they won because they won the East.
10-6.
Who would they lose to?
Didn't make the playoffs.
Okay,
six
so they
and
did
nine.
Have a 10-6. Okay.
Yeah, so back-to-back 10-6, and then he went 6-9, and they canned him before the end of the season.
Yeah.
And he moved on. And of course, he went to San Fran, and now that didn't go very well.
No. So he did it. So he had back – okay, first two were 10-6, and only one of those was a playoff year. Gosh. And that's tough sledding when you win 10 games in the NFL in a 16-game season, and you can't get in the playoffs. Whew. Who'd they lose to in that first – I don't remember their loss. Oh, okay. No, I do remember that game.
What went wrong is when Lurie gave him control of the roster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When Jeffrey Lurie said he could be the GM and the coach, that's when it all went south.
Well, and I think the players weren't in love with him either.
No.
There was a lot of
because remember, that's how DeMarco Murray got here.
Yeah.
Because he went and signed that big deal with Philly, and he and Chip didn't get along.
Yep.
And so he traded him here.
Let's go to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tristan wants to weigh in. What's up?
Yes, one of the coaches was Mark Helfrich, the Oregon coach that led Oregon to the playoffs. That's who.
Right, he replaced Kelly, right? He inherited Kelly's team?
Yes, he did.
He did a nice job. That's the guy. I could I couldn't remember his name when he was the coach.
So wait, was he the coach when Mariota was there and went to the playoff? Had Kelly left at that point?
No. I don't think so.
They got to the finals. I think when they lost to Cam Newton in Auburn, I think Helfrich was the coach.
But that wasn't the playoff.
That was the championship game.
I know, yeah. But the play that was still the BCS, wasn't it?
That was before. Yeah, so
the playoff
must
hadn't been around all that long.
You're right.
Helfrich went to the championship in the first year of the playoff with Oregon. I think Kelly
that
was
Mariota.
That was Mariota.
Okay, so Kelly never went to the
playoffs.
No, because it was not a regular.
That's right.
At that
point. All right. It all runs together.
See what I mean?
They never even got to the playoffs.
This love fest for Chip Kelly
is
mind-blowing.
He had some good years, though.
Good years that led to nothing. I mean, what is
that? Led to nothing. 10-3, 12-1, 12-2, 12-1. That's him at Oregon.
Okay, but it
won the Rose Bowl, won the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, Mark Richt is sitting there going, yeah, but you know, you got to do more than that because, you know, then they don't want you around anymore.
If I remember correctly, I'm getting older. The years are running together. But if I recall, that was the time where they couldn't beat Stanford. Am I right? Wasn't that Andrew Luck?
Yeah, there was a guy, Derek Mason was the defensive coordinator.
Well, a guy named Andrew Luck had something to do with it, too.
And there was an Andrew Luck guy, and yeah.
So that team, that Oregon team in 2014 that went to the playoff with Mark Helfrich in his second season, do you guys remember who the OC was?
It was a Jim Harbaugh guy out there in the Pac-12, Pac-10 then, right?
Yeah.
So Oregon, in the 4 years that Chip Kelly was the coach, final ranking, 11-3-4-2. You think Oregon would take that? That's pretty good.
They would take
that.
That's pretty
good.
They would take
that. Considering it doesn't seem
46-7. 46-7 is pretty good.
It doesn't feel like people are flocking to go to the Oregon job.
33-3 in the league?
Is it coveted as much as it was back in the day? I don't know. Maybe.
No,
maybe
because so. I don't know if the Pac-12 is coveted as much as it was.
It's such a sleeping giant, I think.
The USC hired Lincoln Riley.
I don't really know about it being a giant. I think it's just sleeping.
Well, it depends. If Lincoln Riley can be the Lincoln Riley that he was at Oklahoma,
USC is a sleeping giant, I think.
Then they could be. It just can Lincoln Riley be – can Lincoln Riley do it without Bob Stoops? Because Bob Stoops has been around, and you can't tell me that he hadn't had his fingers on things. So can he do it on his own at USC? That's going to be the question.
Yep. All right, we'll come back. We'll have David Poyle in about 15 minutes. We'll come back hour number two next.